Welcome to this edition of Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson.
We hear that term, the Messiah, and of course that is the Hebrew for the Christ. And so we want to consider this. These men surrounded Jesus and they said, "Tell us plainly, how long are you going to keep us in suspense? Are you the Messiah?" That's the question. Is Jesus of Nazareth the Messiah?
Today on Back to Basics, Pastor Brian continues his study in the Gospel of John. Join us as Pastor Brian begins his teaching on John chapter 10, verses 24 through 25, in a message titled, "The Messiah." Now here's Pastor Brian.
All right. Well, John chapter 10, we are studying together, as most of you know, through John's Gospel. And we are picking up in verse 22 of the 10th chapter, but we're going to do something just a little bit different in that we're going to leave off our verse-by-verse study, and I want to concentrate on a particular topic. But let me read to you the first couple of verses as we pick up in verse 22. "Now it was the feast of dedication in Jerusalem, and it was winter. And Jesus walked in the temple in Solomon's porch. Then the Jewish leaders surrounded him and said to him, 'How long do you keep us in suspense? If you are the Messiah, tell us plainly.' Jesus answered them, 'I told you, and you do not believe.'" What I'd like to do in this study is I want to look at the specific topic of the Messiah, the messianic hope. We hear that term, the Messiah, and of course that is the Hebrew for the Christ. And so we want to consider this. These men surrounded Jesus and they said, "Tell us plainly, how long are you going to keep us in suspense? Are you the Messiah?" That's the question. Is Jesus of Nazareth the Messiah? Now, we want to look at several things. We want to look, first of all, at the meaning of the word Messiah. Secondly, we want to look at the scriptural expectation of the Messiah. We want to look at the Jewish expectation of the Messiah at the time of Jesus. And then we want to see what the messianic expectation is among the Jews today. And then finally, address that question, is Jesus of Nazareth the Messiah? So, what is the meaning of the word Messiah? We use that word frequently. Perhaps you don't know what it means. The word simply means an anointed one. An anointed one is the meaning. It was used primarily in relation to priests and kings because they were anointed with oil at God's instruction. It also applied to the prophets because the prophets were anointed with God's Spirit as his chosen messengers. But its primary reference is to one who would come in the fullness of God's power to deliver Israel from all their troubles and to establish the universal reign of the house of David. Now, of course, when we read in our New Testament, we, generally speaking, read Christ. On a very few occasions, we will actually read the word Messiah, and that's simply because the New Testament was written in Greek, and the Greek word for the Hebrew Mashiach is Christos. And so, but every time we read the word Christ, we're reading the word Messiah. So we need to realize that when we say Jesus Christ, what we are really saying is that Jesus is the Messiah. Jesus is the Christ. Now, what was the scriptural expectation of the Messiah. Because there was, of course, this anticipation that one would come. Where did this anticipation come from? It came from the scriptures themselves. The scriptures declared over and over again in many ways throughout a very long progressive revelation that God would send a deliverer, the Messiah. So, let's look together at the scriptural expectation. What does the picture look like? You see, what God did through the scriptures is he really painted a picture of the Messiah in advance so that when Messiah did arrive, people would be able to identify him. If they had really studied the scriptures and taken them at face value, they would have had a pretty good idea in their minds of what Messiah would do because God had laid it out in advance. The first thing we understand concerning the Messiah is that he is to be the seed of Abraham. So the promise goes back further than Abraham. The original messianic promise was given to none other than Adam and Eve themselves. God promised that he would send a deliverer to undo what they had done by disobeying God and bringing sin into the world. But as the revelation progressed, it became clear that the Messiah was going to come through this man, Abraham. And so God declared to Abraham in Genesis 22:18, "In your seed, all the nations of the earth will be blessed." So the Messiah is going to be of the seed of Abraham. But then as time goes on, the revelation becomes more and more specific. We learn some time later that the Messiah is to come from the tribe of Judah. Now, Abraham, of course, had a son, Isaac. Isaac had a son, Jacob. And Jacob had 12 sons. And one of Jacob's sons, his fourth son, was named Judah. And we are told in Genesis 49:10 that the scepter shall not depart from Judah until Shiloh comes, and to him shall be the obedience of the people. So the Messiah is to come through Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, but now more specifically through Jacob's son, Judah, and his descendants. As we go further into the history, we find that the Messiah is to be now a descendant of David. And David was from the family of Judah. But we read in 2 Samuel 7, 12 and 13, God speaking to David, he said, "I will set up your seed after you who shall come from your body. I will establish the throne of his kingdom forever." So this is the picture. It's beginning to take shape. He's going to be of the seed of Abraham, more specifically of the tribe of Judah. And now even more specifically, he's going to come from the house of David. He is going to be a descendant of King David. We find from the prophecy of Micah the very location of the birth of the Messiah. We read in Micah that he is to be born in Bethlehem. It says, "But you, Bethlehem, out of you shall come forth to me the one who is to be ruler in Israel, whose goings forth are from old, from everlasting." So, David was himself from Bethlehem, and now his descendant, to whom the throne is going to be permanently passed on to, he will also come from Bethlehem. But then we read in Isaiah, the 14th chapter, that the Messiah would be born not in the usual fashion, but he would be born of a virgin. And so Isaiah declared, "The Lord himself will give you a sign. Behold, the virgin shall conceive and bear a son, and you shall call his name Emmanuel." Emmanuel is the Hebrew word for God being with us. And so Isaiah declares that the Messiah would be born of a virgin. Zechariah gives us more insight. And let me just say, as we're going through these, there are many details that I'm passing over because we don't have the time to go into all of the detailed prophecies. I'm just trying to hit some of the more obvious and major ones. But Zechariah tells us that the Messiah would enter Jerusalem on the back of a donkey. Listen to Zechariah chapter 9, verse 9. Behold, your king is coming to you. He is just and having salvation, lowly and riding on a donkey. Daniel, in his prophecy, we are told that the Messiah would be cut off. And the idea there is that he would be slain. He would be executed. And Daniel tells us that this would occur before the destruction of the second temple. We read in Daniel 9:26, Messiah shall be cut off, but not for himself. And the people of the prince who is to come shall destroy the city and the sanctuary. We learn from Isaiah's prophecy, the 53rd chapter, we learn that the Messiah would suffer and die as a sacrifice for the sins of Israel and the world. Listen to Isaiah 53, verses 8 and 10. For he was cut off from the land of the living, for the transgression of my people he was stricken. Yet it pleased the Lord to bruise him. He has put him to grief when you make his soul an offering for sin. So you see, the picture is developing more and more thoroughly and becoming more and more clear regarding the person and the mission of the Messiah. We're told in numerous places, but specifically in Hosea 13, 14, that the Messiah would rise from the dead. We read in Hosea 13, 14, O death, I will be your plagues. O grave, I will be your destruction. And then we read of the reign of the Messiah, that he will reign in righteousness forever. Isaiah chapter 9, verse 7 states, of the increase of his government and peace, there will be no end. So in these and many, many other passages, we have an understanding of the expectation of Messiah from the scriptural standpoint. If you were a student of the scriptures, this is the picture that you would have of this one who would come. Now, what was the Jewish expectation of the Messiah at the time of Jesus? Now, of course, you would think, based upon what we just described, that the Jewish expectation would have been right in perfect harmony with the scriptures. But unfortunately, that wasn't the case. And for a number of reasons, we've touched on some of those in previous studies, but we just could best understand it in this way. We have to realize that at the time of Jesus, Judaism had gone through a major transformation. It was no longer the religious system that God had given to Moses. It was a system that had been greatly altered through the influence of the rabbis. And because of the rabbinical perspective and understanding of Judaism, certain aspects of the Messiah's ministry were not seen as necessary, therefore would have been completely overlooked. And other aspects of the Messiah's ministry would have been emphasized, but unfortunately to the exclusion of other vitally important things. But to answer the question, what was the Jewish expectation of the Messiah at the time of Jesus? According to Rabbi David Rosen, the expectation was this: Messiah would bring an end to foreign oppression, in gather the Jewish exiles, and establish an era of universal peace. That was the primary understanding of the Messiah's role at the time that Jesus came onto the scene. They were looking primarily at a deliverer, a political person, a person who would free them from the long, long history of oppression and bondage, and a person that would fulfill all of those promises to them nationally, and in the process, bring in an era of universal peace. Now, the rabbis who were the religious leaders of the day, the very men that were questioning Jesus, as we read here in John chapter 10, they would have envisioned the Messiah as the embodiment of all they held sacred. He would meticulously uphold both the written and the oral law. So you see, these guys, they were the custodians of the law. They perceived themselves to be, and were perceived by the majority of people to be, the most righteous and holy men in the nation. And in their thinking process, the Messiah would have just been sort of a glorified version of who they were. But there was, in the midst of all of that, quite a bit of confusion over the person of the Messiah. Because there were certain places in the scripture that seemed to be saying certain things about the Messiah that were inconsistent with the common concepts, but nevertheless, they were there in the scripture. So some of the rabbis actually tried to wrestle through some of these things and make sense of them. And the confusion that existed comes out in many of the rabbinic writings. For example, we read the passage regarding the Messiah coming humbly upon a donkey. But Daniel, in the 7th chapter, declared that the Son of Man would come in the clouds of heaven. And so the rabbis read these two things and they thought, now, what does this mean? And how could it say this here and then something different over here? And so one rabbi concluded that basically what God was saying is if the people were undeserving, the Messiah would come humbly in humiliation on a donkey. But if they were deserving, if they were meritorious, if they were righteous enough, he would come in power and glory. There was seemingly, as they read through these passages, there was seemingly also the idea that somehow the Messiah was going to suffer, that somehow he was going to experience affliction and even possibly death. And this was difficult for them to reconcile. So what they came up with was a theory of two Messiahs. They came up with the idea that there would be a person that they referred to as Messiah, son of Joseph, and Messiah, son of David. Joseph, of course, suffered much in his history. And that's why they labeled this particular Messiah, Messiah, son of Joseph, because he would be the suffering Messiah. And that's how they were trying to get around some of these statements, like the statements in Isaiah 53. So they taught that Messiah, son of Joseph, that he would come and he would be a warrior, and he would battle on behalf of Israel, but at a certain point, he would die in battle. And then, later, Messiah, son of David, would come, and some rabbis taught that he would perhaps even resurrect Messiah, son of Joseph. But whether or not he did that, Messiah, son of David, would come, and he would then establish the worldwide kingdom of God. So, you know, we understand from the rabbinic literature that there wasn't a settled view on the Messiah. There was quite a bit of confusion, and there was quite a bit of variation in the opinions. As a matter of fact, some of the passages that back in the ancient time were considered messianic are no longer considered messianic today and haven't been considered messianic since, about the 12th century. And in talking to rabbinical leaders today and asking them the question, now, how do you reconcile this? Some of your ancient rabbis saw these passages that we believe are messianic. They saw them as messianic, but you deny that there's any messianic element to it. And they will simply answer with, we base our final conclusion on a majority consensus. And so now the majority of rabbis do not believe those passages were messianic, so we dismiss the fact that previous generations of rabbis did attribute a messianic element to them. So at the time of Jesus, there was a general expectation that Messiah would come primarily as a ruler, but as we've seen, there was also a lot of confusion. Now that brings us to the next question. What is the messianic expectation among the Jewish people today? Well, we have to understand that the Jewish world is not a harmonious world necessarily. There are divisions within Judaism itself as a religious system, and then, of course, there are many Jews who just simply are not religious at all. But we'll consider the messianic expectation among religious Jews. Amongst Jews today, you have basically three strains of Judaism. You have Reform Judaism, Conservative Judaism, and Orthodox Judaism, which we could add ultra-Orthodox to that. Now, in considering the messianic expectation among Jews today, Reform Jews are basically humanist, looking for humanity to usher in utopia. Reformed Jews reject the inspiration and authority of the Bible. They reject the miraculous elements of the Bible. They write most of it off as mythology, but they do hold on to Jewish culture. But primarily, they are looking at things from a humanistic standpoint. The conservative Jews, on the other hand, are more orthodox in their beliefs than the Reformed, but not as orthodox as the Orthodox. And the conservative Jews look for Jews to lead the way into a messianic age of universal peace and prosperity. So they believe that there is a messianic age, and they do believe that Jews will lead the way into that messianic age. So, you know, they're a step or two beyond the Reformed Jews in their perspective on the Messiah. But the Orthodox and the ultra-Orthodox Jews, they are the ones who still hold today to a belief in a personal Messiah. Where Reformed Judaism and Conservative Judaism, they don't believe in a personal Messiah in the sense they don't believe that the Messiah is going to be a person. They believe it's an ideal. And so it's going to be an age primarily that's ushered in through a collective effort. But amongst the Orthodox and the ultra-Orthodox, there is still the belief that there is going to be a personal Messiah. Now, here are the distinct beliefs of the Orthodox regarding the Messiah. Number one, the Messiah will be a man like Moses as opposed to the Son of God.
For the month of September, Back to Basics Radio would like to recommend a book titled Found Faithful by Elizabeth Skoglund. It's a book of testimonies of great spiritual leaders such as Charles Spurgeon, Amy Carmichael, C.S. Lewis, Ruth Bell Graham, and others. These saints were flesh and blood human beings with real problems, but they found meaning in the middle of their suffering. They were sometimes wounded in their respective journeys through life, but because of the way they dealt with pain, by definition, they became heroes of the faith. They found God's faithfulness in their circumstances, and because of that, they were found faithful. We encourage you to call us right now at 1-800-733-6443 or visit us online at backtobasicsradio.com to order this book titled Found Faithful by Elizabeth Skoglund. And when you give a gift to Back to Basics, we'll send you this book as our way to say thank you. We do appreciate your generous support of this ministry. We'd also like to remind you that all of our other resources are waiting for you at backtobasicsradio.com or by calling our request line at 1-800-733-6443. That's 1-800-733-6443. Our desire is to encourage you in your daily walk with God. We'll continue tomorrow with more valuable insights from Pastor Brian as we study together in the Gospel of John. Back to Basics is the preaching and teaching ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.